When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special mom in your life. And what better way than with the Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets that are perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their advanced eye care duo brightens, awakens, and firms the skin around your eyes, while the golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths the skin all over. Both sets are packaged in giftable boxes. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. And the best part? For a limited time, you can save up to $46 on Osea's sets. Plus, get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. This Mother's Day, get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off site-wide.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spurs show. It's Theo Delaney here in North London, feeling quite chipper, as I imagine most Spurs fans are. We'll find out soon enough because I've got three big Spurs fans with me. I've got, welcome back, Adam Powley.
Hi there, Theo. Good to see you.
How you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well.
Good. Welcome back also, Hannah Barlow.
Hi, everyone. Good to be back.
How are you, Hannah?
I'm well, happy to be among such esteemed company.
Good. And making her debut, Chris Powros from the Proud Lilywhites. Good evening, Chris.
Hello, Theo. Hello, everyone. It's really great to be here. I did say yesterday on Twitter, this is one of my favourite Spurs pods, and I wasn't just blowing smoke into places. I really do like listening to this, so thank you for having me.
Well, that is lovely to hear. Thank you ever so much for saying so, and you're very welcome. And in fact, I do feel, because sometimes I forget to do this, perhaps before we talk about our glorious victory in the Northeast, other issues and forthcoming fixtures, I might start with you, Chris, and ask you the obligatory Spurs show question for all debutants. Mm-hmm. Can you remember your first game watching the mighty Spurs?
I absolutely can. I'm going to show my age now. It was April 1980. I was probably about six. I went with my uncle, who had a season ticket with loads of his mates, and one of them couldn't go, so I went. And the excitement was palpable. And that feeling I got as I walked up the stairs and saw the pitch, that little crackle that I got, I still get it. Yeah. And I absolutely loved it. We won 3-0. We beat Everton 3-0. And I did that thing that you did in the car when you were coming home from a Spurs match in the 80s, where I wound down the window. You know, it was actually a handle. Yeah. I jammed my scarf into the window and closed, wound it back up again. And the Spurs scarf flew all the way back from Tottenham to Southgate. Because that's, as I was telling Adam earlier, that's why I grew up where I grew up. And I have very fond memories of that game. And of course, the team in 1980 was full of like amazing players that we still talk about today.
Yeah, I mean, you presumably saw Hoddle and Ardiles and Ricky Velia that day. And if it was, would it have been, if it was the autumn of 1980, you might have seen Crooks and Archibald as well.
I don't think it was April.
Oh, it was April. So it was the April. End of the previous season. So yeah. pre-Crooks and Archibald, but you had that sublime midfield to feast your eyes on. No wonder you were hooked.
Chris Hughton's first season as well, and I always liked him. And I wonder if it's because I can't remember where we were, but we were obviously down by the side of the pitch.
Right.
But I imagine he was sort of marauding.
Yeah, up the left, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. I was hooked.
Good. Well, pleased to hear it. And here you are now. Who'd have thought it, eh? We're all hooked. And here we are paying. But on a day like this, I mean, God knows, I've been on a few Spurs shows, and they're not always the happiest occasions. But today we are quite happy because Spurs won 3-2 on Sunday up at Newcastle. I was actually there. And before that, we won, of course, in the league. So we're on a bit of a strange run here in this bizarre, very, very kind of extreme roller coaster season. Win three, lose three, win three, lose three kind of season. Really crazy. Adam, did you watch the game?
I did. Yeah, I watched it from afar. And fair play to you and everyone else that made the long old hole to get up there for that game, not just to get to Newcastle, but the ascent to base camp of Everest, yeah, like to get up to the top tier as well. So yeah, glad you all made it back in one piece.
Yeah. Fantastic. What did you make of it?
Fantastic. I thought it was really good. It was a 3-2 thrashing, really. We should have won by a much greater margin. I think the scoreline really, really did flatter them. I can't deny that I laughed when they scored after 90 seconds because it was just so predictable. It was that kind of brings to mind, you know, like with Only Fools and Horses with Del Boy and Trigger and him telling to play it cool before he falls through the the bar. Yeah. So it had its comic moments. But I think after about that 10 minutes, that kind of like shaky 10 minutes, when Spurs finally realised that, hang on, this lot, they're not up to much, and actually started to pass the ball and put it around a bit. And then the game was set from then. I thought we absolutely dominated. Best performance of the season. Hard to tell because it is Newcastle and they are poor. They're not a good team. But look, things work much better. Three goals, could have been more, and just really good all-round display and a really enjoyable win.
Hannah, did you think it was as much about how bad Newcastle were, or did you see real causes for optimism in that performance?
Yeah, I did actually, because I thought it was the first time we really saw Kane, Son, Moura, Oijberg and Nombele working together so smoothly. It was just so nice to see that delivery coming in from the midfielders into those front three. And that those link-ups, those passing, it just was working really, really well. So I thought that was really positive. I think the question for me is the fact the scoreline was 3-2 and the fact it didn't reflect how strong we were, should that be a concern? Because there were more chances. We did have, you know, a crazy amount of possession. So why, you know, why wasn't it more? And why at the end of the game are we all kind of bellies fluttering thinking, are they going to get a late goal back? Are we going to do a Spursy? So I think, super positive. But I'm always a kind of cautious positive and looking for those things of, you know, what could have been better as well, yeah, as what of went course. Well.
Well, you're a Spurs fan after all. You can't be completely positive. I mean, I must say that I think this lineup, this formation and this lineup, to me, makes absolute sense. Not just because we got two results on the bounce, but I mean, I've been saying for ages, I mean, I say a lot of things. Many of them are stupid, but this one I feel vindicated. Where I've been saying for ages, why on earth have successive managers tried to play Ndombele as part of what the modern football fan calls the double pivot? As a defensive midfielder and you know, to be a holder essentially for other, when you can see all of his strengths are to do with creativity and attacking. And now he's played a couple of games in that role and he's really causing problems for the opposition. And he played 90 minutes, of course, on Sunday. Chris, do you think, are you encouraged by that, by the personnel playing in the positions they're playing in with actually Skip and Højbjerg basically anchoring the midfield and then Ndombele further forward? Do you think that might have been making the difference?
I think so. You know, you can't underestimate playing people in the right position.
Yeah.
It sounds daft, but, you know, there was one game this season where Kane was out on the wing and Sonny was in the middle and it was like, that's not, switch them quick. Because, you know, let's play to the strengths. I think it's like, you know, Tiger Woods, I don't know anything about golf, right? There's a thing that Tiger Woods is really good at. Is it driving? I don't know. Is it driving? So he would spend all his time focusing on the thing that he's good at. And he worked a little bit on the other things, but he knew if he was going to be world class, he was going to do the thing that he was really good at. So let's do the same. And Ndombele is a number 10, right? Oliver Skip and Højbjerg, you know, Oliver Skip is clearly going to learn a load of things from Højbjerg. And Højbjerg's numbers are better than Skip by all accounts, but you can see that they're going to have a really great understanding there. And they're not just cloggers. They can both pass a ball. We've seen Højbjerg score this season. So there's movement there as well. They're great athletes. So, you know, I'm encouraged by that. The only thing that I would say, I'm not a Lucas Moura fan. I'm not a Lucas Moura fan for political reasons, but also just because I think he runs into cul-de-sacs. And, you know, the decision-making isn't always great. So I'd like to see Stevie in that position when he's back fit. And that's where I'd have that, you know, that sort of front three that Hannah's been talking about. But yeah, definitely sort of reasons to be cheerful. The most one-sided second half I've ever seen that we've lost. So we lost that second half 1-0, if you look at it that way. And like, considering what we, you know, we hit the bar, there were so many chances. And sort of like Hannah, but I'm just like, I don't really care. Like, we made all those chances. We won. Let's just move on to whatever the next thing is. And like Adam said at the beginning, that first goal, you know, and Sky were all over themselves. You know, they've been advertising like mad, you know, their documentary about Newcastle in the 90s. And so they were really pushing that. And then, you know, they scored that goal and they were like, oh, it's just like Keith Gillespie playing a ball to Les Ferdinand. And it's like, the other was like, oh, that's so tiresome. And then it was a good move, but that they didn't have anything else in that game. So, you know, we should have put them to the sword. But it was good that we did. And that, you know, and Kane's goal was, you know, the team goal was amazing. And obviously that was my favourite goal. But, you know, Kane's, that's a really hard thing to do. Like, I play football very badly. And actually being able to do that is really quite something. And I, you know, I hope that it's him on the ascendancy now, because regardless of what we say about him, he's a really important, you know, what people think about him and all the things that happened, whatever, it's really important for us. And he's a real talisman for the team. You know that when he plays well, the team will play well.
Absolutely.
So let's push on from it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that front four just objectively and you look at all the amount of caps they've got between them, the front three have got a lot of, you know, a proper seasoned international footballers. All right, Lucas isn't in the team at the moment in Brazil, but they are serious, high-profile, proper footballers. And Ndombele is, you know, is a £55 million player and starting to show glimpses of justifying that. And you suddenly think, actually, that front four, if they actually play to their potential, they could be very good. It's interesting about Lucas, because I'm slightly ambivalent about Lucas. But look at the cover we've got, Adam. We've got, if we wanted to change the attacking players, we've got Brian Hill, who is already a cult hero in Spain. We've got Bergwijn, who I think is still young. He's got loads of bags and bags of potential. You look at Lo Celso, who's an absolutely outstanding number 10 for Argentina. Chris is shaking her head.
I don't get him. I don't understand him, Lo Celso.
Yeah, but I know, and we've all said that for some time, but when he plays for Argentina alongside Messi and everything, he's a proper playmaker. And again, has he had a chance there? And Ndombele's got his chance there. He's suddenly starting to shine. You put Lo Celso there, maybe you alternate them, or just having them top class. Again, he's a top class, high profile international footballer. So, you know, to have that him as cover, have those two contesting that position. I mean, Adam, where do you think suddenly the squad starts to look? I mean, we haven't got any injuries at the moment. That's the great thing. But do you think it suddenly starts to look quite deep?
I think it does. I think that's because it was probably overstated by a certain individual whose name I won't mention and has cleared off finally, was running down the quality of the squad and just sort of, you know, criticising the players and I think kind of like lowering expectations about what they were capable of. I'm not saying that the squad is the finished article by any means, but it maybe isn't as good as some of us think, like collectively, but it certainly isn't as poor as some of us think as a collective unit. There's some really, really good players in there. I'm not convinced by Lo Celso, but what he's got to kind of sort of like to defend him is that he's just played fits and starts football for Spurs over the last 3 years, whatever it is, since he arrived. He's barely got a run in the team. He's played under three managers now. He's been injured. He's been called away. And I think the same applies to a certain extent with Ndombele as well. This is, dare I say it, the painful rebuild. So painful rebuilds don't happen overnight. It's going to sort of, by definition, it's going to take a bit of time. I don't know if we've got the players that will bring us back to that level that we were at kind of three or four years ago. I don't know if we've got the manager to do, to be honest, right? I'm kind of like jury's out on that one. But there are some promising signs, and I think we just need to be patient and give this a bit of time. We're the type of team, I think, where we're going to go on runs of winning games and looking really good, and then there's going to be a bit of a crash and burn and we're going to look awful. That's going to be the story of the season, I think. We just all need to kind of sort of like calm down a little bit and then see how the season pans out over the course of the season.
Yeah.
You forgot Delhi as well, Theo. I'm a Del evangelist.
Yes. Oh really?
I don't think he's had enough. He hasn't had a run since He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of the season, you know, it was a funny old start and all the rest of it. But given, you know, how we played at the weekend, there isn't any space for him at the moment.
No. No.
But I still think that he's a great option because there's no footballer like him in the country.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I must admit, I've become completely exasperated with Delhi, but of course I'd be as delighted as anyone else if he turned it around and became the old Delhi again. And maybe the way to get him, maybe the thing would be to make him, which they seem to have been doing, is to make him a regular starter in Europe and see if he can get back that way. But frankly, from my point of view, I haven't seen him with his finger out for a long time, but we'll see. We'll see. Let's see how motivated he is and whether he can get back to that. Just talking about Newcastle, one of the things that struck me when I was up there, yeah, we've had all the bloody Sky people absolutely, you know, fawning all over this idea of the new ownership. We had Jamie Redknapp rather bizarrely. I mean, I didn't watch it, obviously, because I was up there saying, oh, you know, people, fans, they're not really bothered about who owns the club, which is the most bizarre thing to say, considering they've spent the last 10 years complaining about who owns the club. And all fans are always... nearly always agitated to some extent or another about who owns their club, because after all, the clubs, the true ownership of any club is its fans, because the fans are the only people who are never going to go away, you know. I mean, the trouble with it's not really our issue, thankfully, who owns Newcastle, but it is to some extent. And what I noticed up there was that there were some protests up there about the Saudi regime, and one of them, I'm proud to say, came from Tottenham Hotspur, and it was a proud Lily White's protest. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about that, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's complicated, I get it. But, you know, having an oppressive regime running a football club, you know, we talk about football clubs as important community assets, and they are important community assets, and they mean something to us, and they mean something in where they are and all the rest of it. And to have a regime that oppresses and brutalizes the LGBTQ plus community, and that's before we've even thought about what it's like to be a woman in Saudi Arabia, what it must have been like for Jamal Khashoggi's family to watch people, you know, jumping up and down with flags and with, you know, the slightly sort of racist gesture of like having tea towels on their heads as well. It must have been awful. But, you know, I understand, you know, the PIF are invested in Disney and Netflix, and we all watch Disney and Netflix. But as I say, our football clubs are our community assets, and actually they're a real people's lives. So I don't know if you saw Adam Crafton's piece in The Athletic. I won't go into it in great amount of detail, but he spoke to dozens of LGBTQ plus Saudis. And this matters to them, because actually what they're saying now is maybe this will help shine a light on what life is like for them on a daily basis. And imagine, you know, if you're Adam, I don't know Adam very well, I've spoken to him a bit in this last week, and you're trying to explain to LGBTQ plus Saudis, you're trying to say to them, well, it's really hard for Newcastle fans because, you know, it's been tough for them under Mike Ashley, to people who are brutalised and oppressed on a daily basis. Now, the person that he heard about a lot throughout all of his conversations was a guy called Sahail Al-Jamil. And Sahail was, he's a 25-year-old. He's a, sort of a social media influencer. He's got about 100,000 followers on Twitter. And he is reported to be 2 years into a prison sentence and a political prison for posing shirtless in a photograph on Twitter. And the charge sheets include cyber crimes, homosexuality, imitating a woman. So just think about that for a second. So it's a feminine guy, but imitating a woman is a crime that can put you in prison. Mm. Disobedience, public indecency, etc. And he's a real icon for LGBTQ plus people in Saudi Arabia. And he's alleged to have received 800 lashes. And as I say, he's in a political prison, which is worse than a normal prison. And so a lot of the LGBTQ plus Saudis were saying, oh, we want you to kind of shine a light on Sahail being in prison. So one of the things that we did, the thing that you saw, Theo, when you were up there, was one of our members, Russell, made a little video outside. You know, a couple of our members as well had those, you know, like those signs you get that sort of say, "Deli, can I have your shirt, please?" Saying just saying "Free Sahil." And we just did a little social media thing. And we're hoping that Palace will carry it on next week. And then the team after that, etc. Because if we can, you know, we're talking about it here to think about that. And look, I get it. I get it. You know, like the government sells bombs to
Saudi Arabia,
and they're bombing Yemen with them.
Yeah.
Right. And we've got a strategic, there's a strategic defense alliance and all the rest of it. But we can't just go, "Oh, well, it's all terrible, so we're going to sit on our hands." If there are small things that we can do that include something like this, which is a very human story, that we might be able to help get this young man out of prison or at least shine a light on it, then I'm down for that. So, yeah. Hashtag Free Sahil, kind of talk about it on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. Hashtag Free Sahil. How do you spell Sahil?
S-U-H-A-I-L. If you look on the, I've pinned the video that Russell made on the Proud Lily White's social media, which is at Spurs LGBT. So have a look at that if you like.
And Russell's Roger that on Twitter,
he
isn't he?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Just to say, kudos to you, Chris, really, for doing this, because this type of thing is entrenched and normalised a lot of the time in football. The next World Cup is in Qatar. Mm. It's not the only incident. It's not the only thing. And I think it is up to fans, players, communities to raise the noise around these things when we don't like it. And I think, sadly, in football, as we've seen with the Super League and those plans that were brought forward, too many decisions are made just with money in mind, and not enough decisions are being made with ethics, values, morals, etc. And what we can do, as the fans and the players have done this as well, is say, actually, the culture, the club that we want to build is about combining the money and the morals. And some clubs do it well, right? Because we know clubs like Man City, who have taken financial decisions and pursued that route, their fans are still not happy, even though they're playing really good football and winning stuff, because they feel undermined by certain decisions, etc. So I think the best clubs, the best football, is when decisions are taken that are about investment, but they're also about values, culture, ethics, etc.
I mean, I like that idea that you said right at the beginning, because it's this terrible dilemma. If you're a Newcastle fan, I know, who texted me last week and said, "What do you think?" He said, "I don't know what to think." And I was thinking, well, if it was us, what would we do? I like the idea of, because they're paralysed. Like, on the one hand, oh my God, we're going to buy all these players and we've been waiting for this. And on the other hand, Jesus, can I even enjoy that even at all with a clear conscience? But I like the idea that you said, Chris, to use it as an opportunity to help, you know, use it as a vehicle, because suddenly all this attention is going to be on there. And if you can get in front of cameras and use football as a, and maybe that's the way to play the World Cup as well. I mean, you know, in the World Cup, we're all compromised with the World Cup as well, but maybe there are players. I know there are players. I've just had a guy called Musa Okwonga on my other podcast, Life Goals, this week. He's a fantastic bloke. And he chose a goal by Leon Goretzka, that scored against Hungary, a last minute equaliser in the last World Cup. And, you know, in the crowd were all those fascist Hungarian supporters. And he went over to them and did the heart sign to them after he'd equalised, you know, and amplified it later on social media. And I just thought, that's great. That's actually using it. Because you're not saying to anyone, look, we can't play football because all these nasty people behind the scenes. We'll play football, but we'll make sure we use it to highlight things that are going on behind the scenes. You know, I think that maybe that's the way forward.
Well, that's exactly what we do in the Proud Lily Whites. I mean, there's something that's very important about bringing LGBTQ plus fans together to, you know, create a kind of a sort of safe and welcoming space. But for me, from a sort of a campaigning perspective, it's all about using football as a lightning rod to make change. And, you know, it's our national game. It's how we learn to work, play and celebrate together as children. That feeling that we all get that, you know, that electric feeling that we're talking about, just when you're just rising off your seat, just as the ball's flying through the air. Don't want to deny that to anybody. And yeah, so we should all be involved, but you can also use it as the national game to like have these important conversations. And we've seen, you know, I think Gareth Southgate has been a really excellent proponent of that.
Yes.
You know, during the Euros, it's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
And we've got that leadership now in the game. So there's some, you know, there are exciting things we could do, but it is complicated because if it was at Spurs, I'm not sure I would be able to actually go.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
something also about handing over, you know, and I know we're compromised all the time, but handing over your money to a regime that brutalizes and oppresses people, I would find that really difficult.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break.
It's humid, sweaty, and sticky. Summer can be really uncomfortable, but we're actually talking about your mattress. Don't worry, though. Nectar's Nectar Tech cooling technology helps you sleep cool on hot summer nights. Plus, every mattress includes a 1-year trial, forever warranty, and free shipping. With $200 off, prices start at only $399. And get $499 of premium accessories, including pillows, sheets, and a mattress protector this summer. So chill out and visit NectarSleep.com.
And welcome back. Before we continue, we're going to talk about upcoming games with Vitesse Arnhem and West Ham United. Boo! But before we do that, I just wanted to remind you that for premium content, including a daily news show, ex-player interviews, and original documentary series on Spurs, go to patreon.com/SpursShow and support our show in the process. You can get Spurs Show live season tickets that gets you into our monthly live events at season.spursshow.net. You can sign up for this season. We had a brilliant one recently with Michael Dawson. We got one coming up on Tuesday, September, November, it says here. He's not done his... Tuesday, November the 2nd with Nutty Naylor, who's got a new book coming out. And on the 6th of December, we're super excited about our Christmas show. We always do a great Christmas show, usually at the 100 Club. It's at the 100 Club this year, the iconic Oxford Street venue. And this year, we've got Martin Chivers, Alan Mullery, Pat Jennings, John Pratt, Steve Perriman and Phil Beale to commemorate the 50th anniversary of us becoming the first British club to win 2 major European trophies. And amazingly, Mike Lee, well, he somehow has unearthed the never-before-seen second-leg footage against AC Milan in the semi-final, which we'll be showing on the night, and the players won't have seen it before either. That is, he's somehow, I don't know how he's done it, he's like Sherlock Holmes, he's identified an archivist somewhere in deepest Italy, and he's got hold of this footage. There's also music on the night, a raffle, some great Spurs books for you to buy and get signed. And for all the ticket packages, which include, by the way, a pre-show meet and greet and dinner with them, all those guys in a private Soho dining room. That makes it sound a bit seedy. It's not seedy. It's just all about good food and meeting our heroes. You can go to xmas.spursshow.net. And also, I should remind you, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And please leave us a nice review on iTunes if you are so inclined. Next week, we've got, I think it's me again, and I've got Willie Morgan, the original voice of White Hart Lane, and Chris Cowling. Now, that's the housekeeping done.
I once, just for jokes, I once interviewed John Pratt's wife for a job. It was really weird. It's like on her CV, there was this thing like how she'd gone to America for a bit. I was like, oh, tell me a little bit about being in America and what that, you know, what that, how your career took you there. She's like, oh, my husband was a footballer. Anyway, it turns out my husband was a footballer. Boom, boom, boom. Turns out she's John Pratt's wife. I got very excited at the
prospect. Yeah. Did she get the job, though?
You didn't, sadly.
Oh, I cannot believe
it. I liked her very much. I got overruled.
Oh, nepotism and favouritism is dead.
They thought I was being biased. Yeah, exactly. So I got overruled.
Well, that is a disappointing end. What a sad ending to that lovely story. Never mind. Right, we've got Vitesse Arnhem on Thursday. Adam, I'm putting you in the manager's seat. Do you pick a strong side similar to the one that played at Newcastle, or do you think that we're going to get through in this group anyway? I'd rather give game time to the likes of Delhi, Winksy, you know, Gill, Rodon, that level. What do you think?
Probably the latter, I think. We have got a fairly big squad. And we've got some players that if the team keep playing the way they are and there's some consistency in that, some of them aren't going to get a look in the league. So I think it's important that a club where we are and the kind of status and where we are in terms of our progression, we've got to keep those players happy. It's very different to sort of sitting on the bench at Manchester City. It's we need to keep them involved. Let's be brutally honest about it. It's a really nice, jolly away in Europe. It's a different competition, but it's well down the list of priorities. So I think if we just need to use it, to keep kind of sort of some of the players active, fresh, freshen up some of the other ones as well, maybe bring some of the kids through. I think it's that rather than putting out that full strength team and risking things like injuries and tiredness and et cetera, et cetera. We've got the resources, so let's manage them well.
Dane Scarlett didn't play in the under-23 game today either.
Suggests he'll be going. Yeah, maybe they'll start him again, because I thought he got a bit of stick last time he started in Europe, but you just think, hold on a minute, he's a child. I mean, he's starting for the first team. I mean, Harry Kane had to go to 7 different loans before he was in any good at all. And actually, when he finally did come back, we all took the piss out of him for about the first 6 games. And then suddenly, we suddenly looked around and went, oh, bloody hell, wait a minute. So, I mean, the idea you give Scarlett stick for one start where doesn't score is crazy. I like the look of him, and he sounds like he's got a great attitude as well. The only thing I would say about Vitesse is we've heard of them, unlike a lot of the teams in this competition. So presumably they're reasonable opposition. I'm just looking at the group table. We've got 4 points from 2 games. We should be all right, but I suppose what we can do is keep playing a sort of second string, and then if things do get sticky with a couple of games to go, we can always put the big guns in then. They'll probably have the big guns on the bench anyway, certainly would for home games. Hannah, Adam said it, you know, it's way down the list of priorities, but how stoked would you be if we won this competition?
Yeah, stoked. Pretty stoked. I think it's got to be a priority, really. We're in it, and we've got to put out full force because people are watching. And I do think that confidence plays through both, you know, competition and league. And if we're doing well in one, then, you know, it does transfer through. So I think that is important. To pick up on the previous question about, you know, switching up players, I think the defence, we've got to look at that, because personally, I don't think that the starting lineup, particularly Royale, is necessarily cutting it.
Really?
And actually, you know, we have got young talent on the bench, like Tanganga and Rodon. I know they're not right backs, but I would love to see them get a bit more game time, because I really think that 3 out of those 4, I think Reglion's a kind of dead cert, but those positions feel like they could move around, and I think the European games are brilliant games to try those different combinations.
Yeah, and Tanganga can play at right back, even though he's probably not a natural right back. So you could slip him in. You could put Rodon in, and you could put in, you know, I don't know, Sanchez beside him. You could put Davis in at left back, and you could. It's easily changed. For me, I don't know what you guys think, but I like the front 6 on Sunday. The back 4 early on, I mean, their opening goal, I thought the whole back 4 was asleep, but I like Romero. I think he looks top class, which is what we expected him to be. I think those fullbacks are of a type, aren't they? The alternatives are defensive, but those fullbacks are the flying attacking fullbacks, aren't they? So if we're going to play with that brief, then we probably should persevere with him. And to be fair to Royal, he's only, again, he's another one. He's had a real stop start. He's probably, what's he played, half a dozen games? I mean, I thought after a while he looked better on the second, as the game went on, he looked better. I thought he looked good against Villa as well. But where are we on dear old Dyer? Where are we on dear old Dyer, Adam?
Oh, dear old Dyer. Love the bloke. You know, he's been one of the mainstays of the club now. 7 years he's been here. He's such a lovely character. I mean, look what he did on Sunday when he was organising the defibrillator and everything. I mean, that's the kind of man he is. You know, absolute lovely guy. Just the reservations about him as a player. He's been better of late. And he has had good performances as a centre-half, but he needs someone alongside him of good quality.
Yeah.
I think him and Sanchez don't work together as a pair.
Yeah.
They kind of sort of unnerve each other a little bit. I think, you know, Dier, when he's played in defence at his best, is when he's had Toby Alderweireld alongside him, but obviously he's gone now. So maybe this is the partnership. Maybe this is what we need to persevere with. I must admit, I've got my doubts about him as a centre-half. I think he's limited in that respect, but what do I know? The manager sees them in training, and if the results work, and he was good on Sunday along with a lot of them, so stick with it for now, I think.
What about you, Chris? Do you think he's a medium to long-term solution, or do you think you could see Tanganga or Rodon getting in there sooner rather than later in the first team?
As the song goes, I love Eric Dier. And for all the reasons that Adam just said, I can't separate the man from the footballer, and I want to see him on the pitch. Not only for the fact that he was organising, he was organising the defibrillator, for the fact that actually he is a leader on the pitch. There aren't many people who kind of want to shout and like take, you know, as much as he can take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I think I kind of agree with Adam. I think there's something about his partnership with Romero that might, you know, because Romero's got legs in a way that Dier might not have, and all of that kind of stuff. So, and I think there's definitely something there. So I'm up for that. The only thing is I really like Tanganga. And yeah. So I just don't like the thought of having to choose between them.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm kind of, I understand Royale at right back, but Jaffet has had a couple of good games at the beginning of the season at right back.
Yeah.
I guess these are the problems we want to have.
Absolutely.
I want to see Eric Dier in the first team, because I think in terms of, you know, values-based footballers, he's really up there, you know. I read a thing in the morning called Politico, which is all about like stuff going on at Westminster.
Yeah.
And there was one morning where it said spotted in the public gallery in a debate about the restoration of Parliament.
Yeah.
Eric Dier.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know why that was.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet there's a story behind it. I'm absolutely certain.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I just like that was the case.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he always wears rainbow laces, always.
Right.
Well, actually, the players that had always been our stalwarts was Christian Eriksen, Jan Vertonghen, Toby Alderweireld and Eric Dier. And
right.
You know, Eric Lamella at one point before he started changing his boots. And so, you know, Eric Dier is the only one left of that cohort. And that sort of means something to me as well. So, yeah, now I'm all up for Eric Dier in the first team. But I do think, like Adam, you know, I'm not complete romantic, although I suppose I am. I mean, if you're not a romantic, you wouldn't be a Spurs fan, right? I think being next to Romero suits him.
Yeah. I mean, as we know, from all the years gone by, centre-backs need other centre-backs who are going to tell them what to do. I mean, Ledley, we talked about this recently when we had Michael Dawson on, who was a good example of that. He said himself he benefited from playing with Ledley because Ledley, he said that we used to laugh about Ledley, you know, Dawson would just throw himself in and be the blood and guts man, and Ledley would be the brains and the sort of Rolls Royce. But Ledley in turn had said when we had him on that he learnt loads from Nabet, and you need somebody who's really the real finished article, who's calm and knows what to do and knows what to tell the other guy what to do, don't you? So I don't know. It's funny because Dier is obviously the senior, in many respects, the senior member of that partnership with Romero. But Romero looks like the Rolls Royce to me. And then, but the great thing about all this is that we do have cover in all positions. The only one position that really worries me, and it's been a perennial worry, this position at Tottenham for decades, but it's a worry in other clubs as well. Man United fans moan on about it all the time, is the defensive midfield. Because I love Højbjerg and Skip. I think they're excellent, and I think they're going to get better because Skip gets the more Skip gets Premier League games under his belt, and Højbjerg for that matter. But I think there's not much cover there, because really the only actual cover you can really identify is Winks, who seems to have expired in some way. I mean, do you think we'll ever see Winks in a... I mean, do you think he's adequate cover, first of all, Hannah?
I don't, and I think we should. No, I don't. I'm not a Winks fan, I'm afraid. Not anymore. I think he's a good player. He's a decent player, but you know when a time is up at a club, and it just feels like that time. So yes, that is a concern. I think one thing I was just going to reflect on about Eric Dyer is the word leadership. And we know he's a leader on the pitch, and also Højbjerg is a leader on the pitch. And that's why I really like him, because I think, you know, with the likes of Toby and Vertonghen going, you start looking around and saying, you know, who are those vocal players on the pitch? Who do we have shouting and bossing, etc.? And I think that's why Højbjerg, as well as his skill and talent, is such a credit and an asset to this team, because he is someone that can get people moving and bossing the team, really. But yeah, Theo, I'd agree with that. I think it is a concern. But Skip, for me, is looking better each game. I think he looked great in the Newcastle game, and that setup was working really well. But yeah, of course, if we get an injury, then it's a concern.
Yeah. How are you seeing this West Ham game, Adam? What do you think?
Well, it was really interesting contrast to Sunday just gone. There was a sense that everyone else in the country, neutral fans and even fans of clubs who've got no time for Spurs and actively loathe us, wanted us to win that game. Mm. So I think it's going to be back to normal on Sunday, and everyone's going to be desperately hoping that West Ham continue their good form and turn us over. Hands up, like, I think West Ham are a really good team. I think they're really well managed. I think they've bought well. I think they're organised really well, and they're really effective, and that's going to be a tough old game.
Yeah.
So I think, always think this about Spurs teams, is that we're better when we go on the front foot. Right? When we've got that, you know, our strength lies in attack. So let's utilise that. Defence, attack is the best form of defence, et cetera, et cetera. Just go for it a bit. If we try and play at cagey, like, we really kind of sort of do well in being able to contain teams. So let's just play to our strengths. Let's, you know, injuries allowing, fitness allowing, let's maintain the team from Sunday. So we like build perhaps on that momentum. But it's going to be a bit of a tight one. I think that will be our first league draw of the season.
Right. I mean, West Ham are tough even when they're not very good, because, of course, as we all know, it's their cup final. And now the fans are back. It will be that. I mean, those fans, that is the game they want to win. Same as the Chelsea and Arsenal fans, for that matter. It's the one they want to win most of all. So the atmosphere, we've got to deal with that. But in a sense, we sort of had that to deal with on Sunday. And after that terrible early setback, we did deal with it. So maybe that's a reason to feel encouraged. He did send us in to the other London derbies, in particular Arsenal and Palace, the away ones, with a very negative mindset. And I just hope, Chris, that he's learned his lesson. What do you think?
I mean, exactly that, Theo, to be fair. Like, that Arsenal game was like, it was so depressing.
Yeah.
It was so depressing. I'm sure you talked about it ad infinitum, but, you know, it was so depressing because, like, we just didn't look like we were bothered, or that we didn't look like we were interested, and we, like you say, we weren't set up for it necessarily either. So I agree with Adam. I think we just got to go out there and play, because that's what we're good at. We've talked about this very much today. We've talked about the fact that we've got like a really great front four. You know, Ndombele in that position can do great things with the football.
Yeah.
And it's nice to watch, and there aren't many players like him, and all of those kinds of things. You know, we've got the best striker in the world. What, you know, regardless of, you know, you could talk to me about Lewandowski if you want, but I'm not having it. You know, and so, like, why wouldn't you go out and play to those strengths? Exactly what we were saying at the beginning there, you know, and that crossfield pass from Højbjerg or Skip, that kind of, you know, hits a fullback and then we do something interesting. Why not? Let's do that. Let's more of that, please.
Is the argument then for not changing the team in Europe? Because do we want to build the confidence of that setup, you know, and let them win there, and then you come into that game, you know, having built that over the last couple of games? Because there's been a lot of change, hasn't there? So actually, if we've got a good fix, we've got a good 11, let them play again in Europe and then come to the West Ham game, you know, up for it on a...
I hear what you're saying, Hannah. It's just I can see it in the third minute of injury time on Thursday. Kane slips over on his ankle and he's out for 6 weeks. So yeah. Don't risk it.
These are the terrible dilemmas, the difficult decisions that managers face, aren't they? Because you can see both sides of the argument, that's for sure. The time has come now where I force you, I coerce you all into making actual predictions now, score predictions. So I'm going to start with you, Hannah. We're going to do the European game first, then we will come round to the West Ham game, the West Ham Cup final. Hannah, how do you see the scoreline against Vitesse Arnhem?
Okay, I'll go for a 3-1 Spurs.
Love it.
And then against West Ham.
No, don't tell me that yet. Oh, I'm doing that in a separate round. I'm doing it in a separate round because I like to keep the suspense going for the West Ham fans listening. So, Chris, how do you see the game in the Europa?
I was going to go 3-1 Spurs, but seeing as Hannah's had that, I think I'm going to say 2-0. I don't see why we can't go and keep a clean sheet.
Okay, like that. Adam?
I think we can't keep a clean sheet, so 2-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-2. I think it's going to be a right old hurly-burly, scary, all crazy, chaotic. But I think he'll play mostly the second 11, and we'll... of course, last time out, he had to bring the big guns on to get it all sorted, and he might have to do that. They might have to do a 20-minute cameo at the end. Okay, so now we go to the West Ham game. It's a big game for us. It's enormous for them. It is absolutely seismic. Hannah?
Yeah, I think this one will be a bit of a hurly-burly. I think I want to say 2-1, but I think it's more likely to go 2-2.
Okay, very measured. Chris?
I don't like predicting draws because I just think, you know, if we're predicting, then we've got to there's got to be some kind of fun and jeopardy and all the rest of it in it. I will go with the 2-1.
Okay. To Tottenham Hotspur?
Oh, 100%.
Adam?
1-2.
Yeah, I'm always loath to do predictions. It's the old Mark Falco line when he said, "I don't make predictions and I never will." I've given the game away. It's going to be a score draw. I think it will be 1-1.
One each. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go with, I was going to say 2-1 Spurs, but I'm going to say 3-1 Spurs. But it's going to be very tight, but we're going to be hanging on at 2-1 and then get a third on the break. Towards the end, just at the end there. That's what I'm going to say, because I feel like our tails are up and I think West Ham will really fancy it, but I think we might catch them unawares. I think we might be clicking into some really serious form here. These are the sort of famous last words I've been uttering for years on this show. I've probably ruined it. Still, never mind. Yeah. Okay, that's it. Thank you all so much for coming. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate it. Has anyone got anything they want to plug before I go? You've already plugged, Chris.
Deadly silence, yeah.
I've done the plugging.
You plugged for all of us. I think I mentioned my other podcast, Life Goals with Dear the Lady. Yes.
I will be writing a book at some point in the next 10 years. So look out for it.
Look out for that. Everyone's on Twitter.
Here first.
I will. In which case, I'll take the opportunity, like the books that have done and like worked on with Martin Cloak and Doug Cheeseman and others, they're most of them are available in the Spurs shop. The Lane, like the history of White Hart Lane, that's going well, and it'll be in the shops and also kind of the work we did with Steve Perriman as well. His autobiography, that'll be available as well.
I've literally got all your books, Adam.
Thank you very much.
I can recommend them all. I can recommend them all. Thank you all so very much. Thanks for listening, listeners around the world. This is Dear Delaney in North London saying, "Gather you Spurs!"
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.